Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Order in the Middle East, the war in Gaza, and at home in America, the apparent breakout of anti-Semitism on our elite university campuses. Where does it come from? What are the origins? Who is feeding this? And also, what does it mean about modern universities, especially the elite universities, after decades of understanding that they were dominated by left-of-center faculty? How did it come to this? I welcome Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution, writing most recently at Real Clear Politics about anti-Semitism, one, multiculturalism, two, and diversity, equity, and inclusion, three. Peter, a very good evening to you. The anti-Semitism on campus has been surprising to me because I have a 20th century education and understand that we're dealing with something that had never been seen before in history, the Holocaust of the 1940s and 50s, and the coming to terms with it as the people who were victims, their children, their grandchildren did in the 20th century. And so I was disposed to presume that the reason these younger people on campuses were marching in favor of gangsters and murderers and torturers, Hamas, was because they were not informed, they were not educated. That may be true, but at the same time, anti-Semitism has other driving instruments. You acquainted me with one earlier in our conversation, which is dividing the world simple-mindedly into the oppressor and the oppressed. Is that one contributor to the anti-Semitism? Good evening to you, Peter.
Good evening, John. It no doubt is the rage on American campuses to see the world through the lens of this simple-minded distinction, oppressor and oppressed. But also, I would not underestimate the role of ignorance on campus. It's considerable, and sad to say, much of liberal education, what passes for liberal education on campus, does little to provide students knowledge of history. But what we're also witnessing since the October 7th massacres perpetrated by the Hamas jihadists is a renewal of anti-Semitism on campus. It's very ugly and it's very dangerous. It's not the only explanation for the sympathy we see demonstrated for the Hamas murders, but it is one important factor.
Now, here's a revelation to me. Boycott, divestment, and sanctions. I saw that earlier in this century and spoke to it often with guests and was under the presumption that it had been defeated, that it was driven back. It attempted to recruit and hold events at various campuses across the country, and there was a handful of speakers who were traveling everywhere. Well, it didn't take hold, was my opinion. But your case is that it was spreading a basis for trouble ahead. Was that conscious on its part, preaching about boycotting Israel, knowing that you were conveying facts that were distorted?
I think there's very little doubt that BDS has been playing the long game, that they have been sowing misunderstanding, even slander about Israel, doing their best to turn Israel into a pariah nation. And so while it's true, I think, especially during the Trump years, when the State Department had a very effective envoy fighting against anti-Semitism, the attack was taken to BDS. But they have persisted, and there are There are groups on university campuses now, especially Students for Justice in Palestine, who work with the central idea of BDS, boycott, divestment, and sanction, which is that the only just outcome in for Israel and the Palestinians is the termination of Jewish self-government in the land between the river, the Jordan River, and the sea, the Mediterranean Sea. So that idea that was so central to BDS continues to have strong support on campus when mixed with multiculturalism. Well, we see what happened. We've seen what happens in the last 6 weeks.
Yes, let's go right to the biggest revelation in your piece at Real Clear Politics is multiculturalism. In my ignorance, I have understood that word whenever I see it as a euphemism for pluralism, tolerance, the American ideal. It isn't, according to the presentation that you, and I'm convinced now, was it always meant to be a sinister force? Because the word itself is, there's no a connotation that can lead you to understand it as hostile.
Yes. Here's the puzzle. America has always been a multicultural society, even at the founding era, though dominated by Protestants. There were a variety of Protestant distinct schools and denominations. So America was designed to be a country with people, for people with different beliefs about what God wanted from us, whether God wanted anything from us, could live together. We have always cherished pluralism, that is, varieties of types of human beings and groups of human beings, and we've always praised the virtue of toleration, which is what enables us to live together. So what exactly was multiculturalism if it was not an affirmation of what America has always striven to be? Well, multiculturalism took a very different attitude about the groups from which we hail and which give so much meaning to our life. Remember, as you know better than most of us, the founding model of the United States is e pluribus unum, right? Out of many, one. But multiculturalism really says out of one, many. That is, it says not only do we all come from different races, ethnicities, different sexes, but our group identity is the most important thing about us. And as a political matter, when there is a clash between rights or the rule of law and our group identities, what our groups demand of us, our defense of our groups, we must give priority to group identity or group rights. So multiculturalism, although it sounds good in practice and could be thought to be consistent with toleration and pluralism, which are so deeply American, is actually antithetical to them.
Let's put this into motion because we're dealing with the Gaza war. Students for Justice in Palestine, is that promoting multiculturalism, that organization? Because they seem to talk about the Palestinians exclusively.
Well, I think they are. They certainly seem to champion the dissolution of Jewish self-rule in Israel, and they certainly do seem to think, judging by the slogans they've been chanting on campuses, that ordinary understanding of human rights, ordinary understanding of the rule of law must give way to their group demands. You see that in the apologies they offer for Hamas. They say, what do you expect people to do who live under Israeli occupation, colonialism, and apartheid, set aside for the moment that those are all outrageous slanders. The argument suggests that there are considerations, group considerations, that transfer, that defeat the simple protection of fundamental human rights, like and prohibitions such as the prohibition in war of indiscriminately slaughtering civilians, maiming, mutilating, raping, and torturing.
The right to return. Here's how I interpret how that works, because it's quite preposterous most of the time. The right to return is meant to be a collective assault on the people of Israel, because what would return is not Israelis. What would return are people who claim to be the original, or whatever the language is. Is the right to return, is that a conscious effort on the part of the anti-Semites, or did it just emerge from the language, Peter?
Well, this is, of course, this is a notion that has been developed by some Palestinians, and it was embraced. It's been championed by BDS movement and Students for Justice in Palestine. We have to make clear that there is no precedent for it anywhere else in the world. Everywhere else in the world, refugee status is one qualifies for refugee status if you yourself have been displaced from a land, and then the international law tries to repatriate you. If it can't succeed in doing that in a decent amount of time, usually thought to be a year, 2 years, international organizations try to find new homes for you. Only Palestinians under international law somehow have the magical ability to pass refugee status on to their descendants. So most of the supposedly 5 million Palestinian refugees mostly in the Middle East now have never set foot in the land of Israel. And yet the supposed right of return says that they should be allowed to go move to Israel. In other words, it's the international community arrogating to itself immigration power for Israel and telling Israel who it must admit. And of course, in a small country of fewer than 10 million people, even a small fraction of the descendants of the descendants of the descendants of the original Palestinians migrating to Israel would end Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel.
I'm speaking with Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution, writing for Real Clear Politics, about the many sources of the anti-Semitism practiced by these young people who apparently have history or have a distorted history, but there's a big piece left to explain. And when we come back, diversity, equity, and inclusion. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bellamy.